couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about that new independent film. You may not have heard about it, Avengers Endgame. I'm also going to be talking about Unicorn Store on Netflix, plus a couple other reviews of Night of the Lepus and Hulu's Future Man. I'll also talk about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Glass and the Academy Award-nominated Mirai. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news that happened this week has nothing to do with the Avengers. It actually has to do with James Bond. Late in the week, Eon Productions had a big announcement in Jamaica at the GoldenEye cabin or bungalow or wherever it was, whatever you call it. It's a place that Ian Fleming had owned in Jamaica, and that's where he wrote most, if not all, of the Bond books. Cary Fukunaga is going to be directing this latest Bond movie. He took over for Danny Boyle, who left because of creative differences. And that, I'm seriously looking forward to seeing what Cary Fukunaga does, because I think he's a talented director. I also don't think he's so overwhelmingly auteurish like somebody like a Christopher Nolan or David Fincher, that he would work so outside of the box that he would kind of ruin the franchise, which is always a danger when you're dealing with people. I talked about the Marvel movies. Of course, we're going to be talking about the Marvel movies here, but I've said this about the Marvel movies. The thing that has kept those movies grounded for 22 films and going beyond Endgame is the fact that Kevin Feige has his hands tight on the reins and is making sure that the directors direct what they want from a Marvel movie. You're not going to get something that's too outside of the box or too off the beaten path, which Fox has run into with stuff like Fantastic Four, or even DC has run into with some of the stuff that happened with Zack Snyder. So Cary Fukunaga is going to be directing. That's not the news. The big casting announcement is Rami Malek is going to be playing the villain against Daniel Craig in his supposedly final performance. We don't know. It may be his final performance. Who knows? He may want to go to 6, because I think it was Sean Connery who did 6. He did 7 if you count Never Say Never Again. And I think Roger Moore holds the record of 7 times being James Bond, actually in a row. Rami Malek is I think a great choice. There are some other choices in there, and there's some other people that are showing up in the cast, but they're no one like big names. Like Malek having just won the Academy Award, this is a big deal for him. And, doing a Bond villain, I think is perfect for this guy. I think he could make a really interesting Bond villain. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with it. Now, they also released a plot description, which is very loosey-goosey, and it doesn't tell you a whole lot. But I'm just going to quote from it. Bond has left active service and is enjoying a tranquil life in Jamaica. Well, a little bit of a side note here. This is not the first time Bond has left the service and went out on his own. Didn't we start that in Skyfall? We've seen that in the other movies here and there where Bond quits or wants to go off on his own and then is pulled back into the game. Anyways, continuing with the synopsis. His peace is short-lived, of course. When his old friend Felix Leiter from the CIA, who's also going to be played by Jeffrey Wright, who played him in the previous Craig Bond films, Felix Leiter from the CIA turns up asking for help. The mission to rescue a kidnapped scientist turns out to be far more treacherous than expected, leading Bond onto the trail of a mysterious villain armed with dangerous new technology. First of all, a wayward psychopath with new technology that involves a kidnapped scientist is pretty much the plot of half of the Bond films. It's constantly some monster who's got some technology, whether it's the guy from Moonraker who's going to wipe out the population of the world, or whether it's the world is not enough where they want to use nuclear weapons, or if it's just Blofeld wanting to blow things up back in the old classic Bonds. It's always about technology and a scientist who's been kidnapped. So this is all a lot of nothing when it comes to this announcement. Aside from Rami Malek actually saying, hey, this guy's definitely going to be the villain, there's not a whole lot of substance here. here. I mean, Barbara Broccoli came out and she has a couple quotes about, oh, you know, it's going to be a challenge for Bond and blah, blah. But there's no specifics whatsoever. But they do have a script because they're starting production this Sunday. They shot a little bit in Norway, probably second unit stuff. But they're starting major production on Sunday, I'm assuming, to give everybody enough time to go see the Avengers. Now, the release date I find is interesting, and this is, I don't think this was news, but it's the release date that's out there is April 8th of next year. And I find that really interesting because Bond has traditionally always been a tentpole release. It's always been like either in the summer or more recently it's been in the winter, you know, like in November. I find it interesting that they're releasing it in April. April has now become a tentpole release season. 20 years ago, it was just garbage in April. But now, I mean, and the ones that the two film series that have propelled this have been Fast and Furious, more so actually, and then the Avengers, because Infinity War and Endgame both have released at the late April. It used to be Avengers. The first Avengers came out first weekend of May. Now you had Infinity War and Endgame coming out last week of April. But also it was Fast and Furious that really kind of nailed that tentpole. I think it was the fourth movie. And that one came out like April 4th. And then that became the Fast and Furious release week. So the tentpole, as I've been saying for months, tentpoles have been spreading out across the calendar, which kind of makes it fun for the movie-going audience because there's always something big coming out. Anyways, this Bond announcement was a whole lot of nothing for me. I think it's the best thing come out of it is Rami Malek. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit really quickly is the new trailer for Child's Play, which opens on June 21st.
I think Chucky did something.
Andy, if you know something, you better tell me.
Something's wrong with Chucky.
Buddy can connect to and control all of your camera power.
Chucky is a toy.
He could be anywhere.
Welcome to Castle and Carr.
We have to stop him.
Good night, Andy.
The most significant part of this trailer is actually hearing Mark Hamill's voice at the very, very end. And I think that's great because I think Mark Hamill is, if there's anyone who's kind of got that, you know, the sort of the geek swagger that kind of helps a movie like this, Mark Hamill has it. I mean, Mark Hamill's kind of like a cool Will Wheaton. I think Mark Hamill is going to be great in this, and I'm looking forward to his performance. What does have me have some reservations is not only the look of the Chucky doll looks a little plastic. I mean, I hate that, just sounds kind of weird to say that, but it doesn't look as good. It doesn't look as scary. Maybe it'll be different as the once the movie gets in there, but I'm afraid that the Chucky doll's not going to be as good. I also do not like this idea of him having control of a smart house, essentially him creating drones and controlling the temperature of pipes. If you watch the trailer, he's doing all this, and I like just the good old fashioned, he's a murderous doll. What's wrong with a murder? I mean, if a murderous doll can't scare you, I don't know what your problem is. The next movie I want to talk about really quickly is Gemini Man, starring Will Smith, which opens October 11th.
I think I know why he's as good as you. He is you.
25 years ago, they made you from me. They chose me because there's never been anybody like me. We have to end this right now. You have all of his gifts without his pain. You made a person out of another person. Then you sent me to kill him.
This is Will Smith again trying to recreate his studio cred. And this reminds me, the choices of his movies remind me of what Schwarzenegger went through in the mid-90s. After he had his hits in the 80s and early 90s, he was doing movies like Collateral Damage and End of Days and The Sixth Day, which were interesting movies. And I actually kind of like those, but they never did the Terminator 2 level of box office. What's interesting is seeing an actor try and grasp at the straws of what his past was, and they do take some risks. And so I think that Gemini Man is a bit of a risk for Will Smith. I don't know how well it's going to pull off. I think hopefully it's not going to be too much into the whole age differential, because of course they de-age Will Smith, and thank God they didn't get Jaden Smith for this. But it could be good. I don't know, but it could also suck because it is Ang Lee, and look what a mess he made of the Hulk. Anyways, that's it for the trailer park, and that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Unicorn Store and Night of the Lepus. We'll be right back. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. I'm going to save the Avengers for the next segment because there's a lot to say about it. And don't worry, it'll be spoiler-free. But I've got a lot to say about the Avengers because it's not just about the movie, but it's about everything leading up to it and what's next and everything like that. So I want to have a longer segment for that. I want to ram these two reviews in here really quickly. The first one I want to talk about is it's an Easter tradition in our house. Now, I have certain traditions throughout the year where I will watch certain movies on certain days whenever I get the chance. For example, on St. Patrick's Day, I usually try to watch Leprechaun, as any good Irish boy would do. And I usually get a bottle of a good Irish whiskey and I'll have a little bit of fun with it. On Thanksgiving, we're always watching cheesy movies like Mystery Science Theater and Riff Tracks, and just bad movies on our own because that's Turkey Day. On Valentine's Day, I try to watch My Bloody Valentine. On my birthday, sometimes I'll try and watch Happy Birthday to Me. On April Fool's Day, I'll watch April Fool's Day. You know what? It's kind of fun to pick these things. On Halloween, obviously, I watch Halloween on Halloween. And of course, we watch stuff on Christmas like It's a Wonderful Life. So on Easter, an Easter tradition in our house has become watching Night of the Leap, as much to the chagrin of my oldest son, who told me recently, he's like, I just have trouble watching that movie because it's terrible. But we temper it by watching the Riff Tracks version of it. But it is a real 1973 movie based on Killer Rabbit. So Night of the Leap is Janet Leigh, DeForest Kelly, and Rory Calhoun starring this 1973 thriller about giant rabbits overrunning a town in the desert southwest.
What happened that night science made its greatest mistake? What unknown terror was born that night? What is the terrifying mutant that strikes from behind the shroud of night? That night of the Leapus.
The first thing that I noticed in this trailer is they go out of their way to not show what the terrifying mutant, as they say in the trailer, they go out of their way to not show what that is. And it's rabbits. Leapus, and they point out what's funny in the beginning of the movie, they're like, oh, Leapus means rabbits. And they point that out so many times, they make fun of it in the Riff Tracks. The reality is Leapus actually doesn't mean rabbit. Leapus is a scientific term for hares, basically. Like jackrabbits fall in the Leapus category. But, you know, like bunnies in your backyard, those are not Leapuses. And neither are the rabbits that you see in Night of the Leapus. But I find it hilarious that they go out of their way to obscure what these things actually are. Because nobody takes a movie about giant killer rabbits seriously. Because they're adorable. And then they just kind of put some red paint on them to make them look like they're bloody after they attack somebody. But really, there's nothing scary about Leapuses in this movie. I find it also funny that this, like so many other films, claim to be based on H.G. Wells. And really, all that goes down to is H.G. Wells had a story, Food of the Gods. And these are all versions of it. Any giant monster that grows, I mean, like this one is based on Food of the Gods. Empire of the Ants, which is about ants getting big, is based on Food of the Gods. Food of the Gods about giant rats is about Food of the Gods. Even though this does fall into one of my favorite subgenres, which is scientists in a lab trying to better society and having things go horribly awry. That's one of my favorite things to see in a movie. But this is really a poorly made movie. It is boring and it is long and drawn out. And the only way to suffer through it is to watch the Riff Tracks version, which I suggest getting. I suggest buying it and downloading it because then you can watch it on every Easter as well. But the other thing that I think is interesting is as bad as this movie is and as goofy and as silly and as bonkers as this film is, there are actually some really decent miniature work in this movie. Unless they got giant rabbits, which I don't think they did. There's the rabbits attacking homes and stores and trailers and cars. And of course, it's little rabbits next to miniatures, but the miniatures work is actually really impressive in this movie, especially considering it's, what, almost 50 years old, 45 years old? That's kind of amazing. This movie has some great model work and some very detailed model work. Now, it's rustic because, of course, there's supposed to be like corner stores in the middle of the desert, but it's kind of impressive at some point. I was watching it with my son on Easter, and I finally said it. I go, you know what? I've seen this movie a half dozen times or so, and I just realized, actually, some of that miniature work is pretty good. So, you know, kudos to you, Night of the Lepus, for making a mess of a film, but actually having some decent special effects, or at least miniature work in it. But ultimately, I'm going to have to say Night of the Lepus is a terrible movie. It's funny on riff tracks, but I do have to say just the raw movie itself kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film on the list, and that is Unicorn Store. Brie Larson directs this story of a failed art student suffering from emotional instability who discovers a store in town that promises to deliver her a unicorn.
You have come to the store, kid.
Behold, we sell what you need.
Unicorns? That was the only thing I ever wanted.
I don't know how to be a grown-up. My parents think that I'm insane.
Honey, what is really going on?
This is crazy.
The most grown-up thing you can do is fail at things you really care about.
You need to learn to love yourself.
Get out there and show us what you can do.
I will!
The reason this one got note is it is Brie Larson's directorial debut. She, of course, plays Captain Marvel, and she's in Avengers Endgame, but of course she's most famously now in Captain Marvel, which came out, what, 2 months ago, a month and a half ago? And that movie was a huge, huge, huge hit because everybody's frothing at the mouth waiting for Avengers to show up, and you got to put this new character and figure out how she's going to fit in there. And she also, of course, in the movie has a friendship with Nick Fury. As we know, at the end of Infinity War, Nick Fury got snapped out of existence thanks to Thanos. So that gives her sort of some skin in the game. And she worked, assuming pretty closely with Samuel L. Jackson. Well, guess who's in this movie, Unicorn Store? Oh, Samuel L. Jackson. And that makes sense because they worked in a big blockbuster and it's a directorial debut. It's a small, intimate character study. Doesn't take a whole lot of money or special effects. And she probably said, hey, Sam, why don't you come over? We'll pay you a good fee and you can spend 2 or 3 days on the set and I can direct you. And he's like, yeah, sure, as long as you pay my money. They dropped the trailer a couple weeks ago and I finally got a chance to watch it. And I remember saying when I covered the trailer, I said, I don't know, this looks like it could fall into cliche. It looks like it could be very, very corny. And it is exactly what you would expect from a first-time feature director. It's not a grand movie, but it has these grand ideas. I've seen this story a dozen times about sort of the flibbertigibbet who's trying to find his or her way in life and has a chance for fantasy, but is the fantasy real? Is it not? Is it somebody trying to scam him or her? The movie has zero surprises to it. I mean, it's okay. There's nothing about the movie that I hated. There's nothing about the movie that I found offensive or problematic or maybe want to just turn it off. It just was a little dull, and it just seemed to be going down a path that we've seen before, and I never felt like there was any sort of revelation to it. You know what it reminds me? It reminds me of like when people do one-act plays, and it's a one-act play that we've seen done a couple times before, just with a different person and maybe a different setting. And so, you know, Brie Larson did a fine job assembling the characters, and as a first-time director, this is okay, but, I mean, she's a long way from, you know, really handling something meaty and significant. I'm feeling generous. Unicorn Store kinda rocks.
It kinda rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about a little independent film called Avengers Endgame. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the big movie of the weekend, the big movie of the year. Let's just go into the trailer and we'll talk about it here. After Thanos triumphed at the end of Infinity War by wiping out half of the population of the universe, the remaining Avengers come up with a plan to fix the future.
Thanos did exactly what he said he was going to do. He wiped out 50% of all living creatures.
We lost, all of us. We lost friends. We lost family. We lost a part of ourselves.
This is the fight of our lives.
This is gonna work, Steve.
I know it is. Because I don't know what I'm gonna do if it doesn't.
First of all, if you have not seen this movie yet, do yourself a favor and turn off your smartphone. Do not go to Facebook. Do not go to Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, any of that garbage. Just put down your cell phone unless you need to make a call or check the weather. Because you go on anything with social interaction, even if you go on news sites, you have a limited time before spoilers are already out there, by the way. Spoilers are already out there. The film opened on Thursday night, and I don't know what the final numbers were for Thursday night, but it was like $50 million just for that one evening. So enough people have seen it, and people have seen it internationally, and there's even just little things like plot points of what happens to certain characters as they're introduced or reintroduced into the movie within the first hour. There's spoilers there. So suffice to say, I found my Halloween costume for this year by watching this film. And anyone who knows me and has known what I've gone in the past as, they know what this is going to be. They're going to be like, oh yeah, absolutely. There's Kevin's Halloween costume right there. The spoilers are already out there, and people are going to be talking about it, and there's enough people out there that are a-holes and won't keep the trap shut. So if you're at all wanting to not have this movie spoiled, either go see it as soon as humanly possible, and before that, just turn off all your social media. Because I was sitting around on Thursday night looking at my, because I had already seen it, I saw it at the press screening, but as I'm looking out on Thursday night, I'm seeing people going, people are posting spoilers for the Avengers. I'm like, why are you on Twitter? Just turn it off. So that's a thing that I find fascinating. It's the same thing happened with Star Wars. And people are like, well, I can't go see it until Tuesday. And it's like, well, then why do you have to be online? I'm not going to spoil anything. I think obviously I can talk about what happened in Infinity War. I think it's been long enough. I mean, if you haven't seen Infinity War, you've got to know what happens at the end of Infinity War to even explain Avengers Endgame. The whole movie is 3 hours long. That's first thing to know. It's 3 hours long. So one of the big news stories that's been going around, especially like at the end of the week, even before the movie released, was when's a good time to go to the bathroom? I hate to tell you, there is no good time to go to the bathroom in Infinity. If there's any time that really you could go to the bathroom, it's going to be in that first hour, because once the second hour hits, it's like boom, 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 and they're doing stuff that's good old fashioned Avengers comic book movie, and you don't want to leave during that. And then of course, by the time you get to the last hour, you're marching towards the climax, and you want to know what happens, and you don't want to miss anything there. My advice to you is just don't get the giant pop and don't get the refill. And if you're going to get the refill, you got to leave the theater anyway. So I actually saw this movie, and not to brag, but I went and saw this movie, and I even had a soda. My son and I shared a soda. I took him to the press screening with me, and we watched the whole movie, and I didn't have to go to the bathroom once, even though we had a large soda, because I made sure to go to the bathroom early enough and plan my stuff. But boy, did I have to go at the end. But if you cannot hold your pee for 3 hours, you're going to be tough, because the only times that there's anything slow enough to go to the bathroom is at the beginning of the movie. And it's in kind of three parts. The first part is the more morose part, because, you know, they've just had the Thanos snap and it's everybody recovering and they're dealing with this post failure on their part and the ramifications and the repercussions and even just figuring out who's gone and who's not. And that first hour is very heavy and very dark and very grim. Of course, you can't do that for a 3-hour movie, and then things do, when they come up with a plan and they want to do something, you've got that sort of that middle segment where things are working, and that's what it is. And that's honestly some of the best parts. It's, you're back to the good old fashioned feel of the Avengers. You got some comedy, you got some lightheartedness, you got some action, and it all works, and you got a lot of stuff going around. And then the last hour is all lead up to the big ending. And it's a great ending. I mean, this is a masterfully done movie, not just because it's a science fiction blockbuster and it's characters that I enjoy. The Russo brothers juggle a lot of characters. I mean, arguably fewer characters than they were juggling in the first movie by about half. You know, I mean, because, like, you know, Black Panther doesn't exactly have a big part in this one. But these movies are really well done. And the reason it worked in the previous one is if you looked at Infinity War was Thanos' story. that was who had the arc. And they were able to have characters show up, come in and come out of the movie, and you didn't feel like it was haphazard or broken because we were following Thanos through the whole thing. I remember watching Infinity War. I think this was when I was watching it on Blu-ray after it came out. I was showing it to my folks. And Iron Man checked out of this movie for like 40 minutes. I mean, he was gone for a good chunk of the movie because it wasn't Iron Man's movie. It wasn't Captain America's movie. It wasn't the Guardians of the Galaxy's movie. This one, you have it a little more intimate because there's fewer of them left, but you don't have the buffer of having it be Thanos' movie. This is much more like that original Avengers, the first one in 2012, where you had to work with these 4 to 6 people, well, sometimes 2 to 6, and you have them in different groups, but you have a couple new faces in there. You got Rocket Raccoon. Of course, he survived from the last movie, but when you get to the middle part of it, that's really the meat and potatoes of it. That's the stuff that's most fun. That, to me, is the stuff that's most exciting. And then the big harrowing stuff is at the very, very end. You know, that last hour, is that's all pushing to the climax. In a lot of ways, it reminds me of how Avatar was done. It's like a 40-minute climax in that movie. That thing just is action, special effects and everything for like the last 40 minutes of that movie. And I feel that Avengers is paced in a very similar way. So kudos to the Russo brothers, you know, Cleveland Unite, for just putting together one heck of a movie that balances the characters. And I mean, are there flaws in it? Sure. And actually, if you think it through, I mean, there's a lot of logic issues with it, but it's a comic book movie. You get this all the time with these kind of stories. And I find it funny how blown away some people are with how this works and how it actually is possible. But I've been saying for decades, go back and read comic books, and they've done these giant overreaching arcs and these big crossover stories and these events where they have special issues that have all the different characters from all different comics coming in. As much as people will say that this isn't a comic book because it goes beyond it and it transcends it, it's paced like a comic book. It's put together like a comic book. It has realistic endings to certain things. It also doesn't get too punishing. It's not just there to hurt the viewer. You know, it's not trying to pull a Game of Thrones here, but it's also has some very significant things happen. And a lot of people are talking, oh, 22 movies, it's the end of it. Well, it's the end of sort of the Infinity Gauntlet story, because we do have Spider-Man coming this summer. You've got a Spider-Man movie coming up. You got Black Panther 2 coming this, like in a couple of years. You've got Guardians of the Galaxy 3 has been greenlit. So you've got all these other movies that are on the table. And it's not like Marvel's going to stop making movies after Infinity War. This movie's going to make like $2 billion. They're going to keep going. But ultimately, it's worth seeing, whether you like Marvel or not. Although, don't go in cold. Yeah, at the very least, see Infinity War. But I'll tell you, if you're going to see this movie, you should also, if you have to brush up, movies that are good to watch before it, Captain America Winter Soldier, Captain America Civil War, Age of Ultron is worth seeing. And, of course, Thor Ragnarok is worth checking out. And even Thor The Dark World. So those are ones that are interesting to watch and should precede this film. And that's it. I'm going to have to say Avengers Endgame totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
And that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to review Future Man from Hulu, talk about the box office, and have the home cinema roundup featuring Glass and Mirai. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move away from the Avengers for a little bit and talk about Future Man. In this second season of the Hulu series, Jake Futterman discovers he is in an alternative apocalyptic future run by an insane man and his old nemesis from work.
Hello, Josh. I'm Susan. I know in your time it's a woman's name. In ours, it's not.
Welcome back, Torque.
I'm in a different reality.
I thought we saved the future.
Our mission failed.
Please, I'm begging you. Is anything normal?
Well, I'm married now. Two beautiful husbands, three handsome wives.
How many years have you been here?
We created this timeline. You know, everyone here is in danger. We owe it to this world to try and save them.
I got Hulu on Black Friday. They had a deal on Black Friday for $1 a month for a year. I don't know if I'm going to continue past that year because I still have to be convinced that there's enough stuff I'd watch on Hulu that's not on the other streaming services. I tried watching Handmaid's Tale, but holy cow, oh my God, that thing is so boring. I can't handle that one. But I was watching like The League. That's the only place I could find The League, which is one of my favorite shows. I ended up getting a lot of advertisements for Future Man when I was watching The League, and I said, hey, why not check this one out? It looked kind of interesting. It's Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen who are working on this, and they, of course, did stuff like This Is the End. And the reason I found it interesting is it's sort of this futuristic comedy. The best way I could describe it, genre-wise, it's sort of like The Orville. If you watch The Orville on TV, that's essentially a Star Trek series. It's not Star Trek, but it's based on Star Trek. It's Seth MacFarlane doing his own version of Star Trek. And when you started watching the series, it was meant to be kind of a crass comedy at times. They have pot joke sex jokes. They have a lot of pop cultural references and everything. But it's clear when you watch the first season, which was only like, it was a short season. But when you watch that first season, you could tell that Seth MacFarlane wanted to do a Star Trek series. And then The Orville kind of took off, and he's moved away a bit from doing straight up comedy and actually doing contemplative Star Trek type of episodes, stuff that rivals The Next Generation. And what's interesting with Future Man is it starts off as this absurd sort of crass comedy of basically based on the Last Starfighter idea where this guy's playing a video game and warriors from the future say you beat the video game, so you got to help us. And they start jumping around, time traveling all over the place, messing up time. And they keep trying to stop this apocalypse from happening, but it's still happening no matter what. And in the second season, they go back to the future far enough ahead and they realize they've completely screwed everything up. But what's interesting is even though there's the crass jokes and everything, as you get into the second season, they're actually suddenly saying, hey, let's actually wrestle with some interesting science fiction topics. Not just, humorous stuff like societal norms. And there's the thing you hear it in the trailer where he talks about being married to like five people. You know, there's that, but there's also some pretty deep science fiction concepts in there. Stuff about artificial intelligence and the nature of time travel, because of course it's about Future Man, so they're jumping around through time. It gets very heady at a certain time and struggles with its own crassness. So it's still a crass goofball comedy, but the science fiction angle is you can tell it's getting more interesting to the writers, and they're actually writing some more interesting stories. So it's actually kind of worth checking out. Nobody knows about this show. Nobody cares about this show. But if you happen to have Hulu, check it out. The first season is rough to get through because they're still trying to figure out whether they want to be a comedy or a science fiction series. But the second season actually has some interesting stuff in it. I'm going to have to say Future Man kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's hit the box office really quick. And not much to talk about from last week. It was kind of a slow weekend. It was a big weekend for The Curse of La Llorona, but that's going to drop very mightily. That made a little over $25 million. Breakthrough did actually surprisingly well with over $11 million. Disney Nature's Penguins didn't even hit the top 10, which is kind of disappointing with only less than $2.5 million. But I think a lot of this is the calm before the storm because everyone just kind of backed off going to the theaters because everybody knows they're going to the theaters this weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first movie I want to talk about is the Japanese animated film Mirai. It was actually nominated for an Oscar this year. A 4-year-old boy struggles with accepting his baby sister. Then he meets her future self, who takes him through a discovery of his own family tree.
Mirai.
Mirai?
It means future. This is your baby sister.
And you have to protect her no matter what.
Big brother. Let's go home.
Look, we're flying!
Everyone in our family is a result of these moments.
It's not
great, Grandpa.
Are you still scared?
This is done by the same director who did The Boy and the Beast, which I covered a couple years ago. And it's that very typical animation style that you see in a lot of Japanese animated films. It has that almost, I'm going to say, a Studio Ghibli look to it, although I know their stuff's not completely unique to its own. It's a very standard animation, but it's a very sweet movie, and it's about family and the connections in family. The kid's a bit of a brat. I do watch this as a guy because it's about a mother and father, and they have a daughter, and the woman's home on maternity leave, but she has a better job than the husband, so the husband works at home. He kind of has to become the stay-at-home father, and he kind of is terrible at it. As somebody who did the stay-at-home dad thing, I always get annoyed when I see incompetent stay-at-home fathers in movies, and so this kind of irritated me a bit. I think there's a certain level of cultural things that go on in this movie. So it is a little out of sorts, specifically in Japanese culture, to have the father stay at home with the kid and the mother go back to working. But you have to do it in this situation because the wife makes more money. But it's a sweet movie. It really cuts through a lot of the noise. And it's that beautiful look at sort of like the Japanese backyard, you know, where things are very idealistic and it's beautifully landscaped. And it's all kind of told from the point of view of this child. So you do get that sense of wonder that comes through. And it's not at the level of some of these Ghibli movies, even though it's not Studio Ghibli. But, you know, Ghibli movies can go really out there, you know, stuff like Howl's Moving Castle or Spirited Away. They're way out there. And then there's other ones sort of like My Neighbor Totoro. I'm talking all Ghibli movies at this point, which are very intimate, that have these fascinating elements to it. But it's still these Totoro's still about these two girls sort of just living in their house in the woods. And it's in a weird way down to earth. And I feel that way about this one, where it has this down-to-earth element to it. It has these fantastic moments where he goes into the garden and meets people from his past and his family's past, but it's done in a very pragmatic way and not freaking out sort of way, because it's a four-year-old kid, so he accepts things better. And it's a beautiful movie. It's totally worth checking out. Now, the Blu-ray has a bunch of interviews and special features, but unless you speak Japanese, it's frustrating to watch because it's all subtitled. Still, it's worth checking out just for the movie itself, worthy of the accolades it got last year. So I'm going to have to say Mirai totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I wanted to hit really quickly another one from the Home Cinema Roundup. Actually, it came out last week, so I'm a week late on talking about it, and that is Glass. M. Night Shyamalan directs this sequel to both Unbreakable and Split, about three men in a mental institution who insist they have superpowers.
The three of you've convinced yourselves you have extraordinary gifts, like something out of a comic book. David Dunn, the only person to survive that train wreck all those years ago. You think you have superpowers.
It's a feeling, vision. I have to touch them.
You believe you are a protector.
And yet, it is true.
What's funny about this one is, having seen it in the theaters and then revisited it on Blu-ray, on one hand, the movie does play better a second time. I knew what to expect. I knew what not to expect. And I think that's important. There weren't as many surprises in what they did and didn't do. Like I said, one of my favorite subgenres is scientists trying to do something good for society and then having it all fall apart. But at the same time, another one of my favorite subgenres are mental institution genres. I always find that stuff fascinating because it's that you're trapped in there. Nobody's going to believe you because you're insane. So this one has that element to it, but it didn't follow the path that I was expecting when I first saw it in the theaters. I was a little more accustomed to it. I knew what to expect, so it helped. Now, on the same token, when you get to the twists, there's some twists I actually think I liked better, but there's other ones that I still think don't work. And I have to say, I do think he tried too hard at the end of it, in particular, to do that big, he was dead all along reveal that they had from like The Sixth Sense. His big gotcha moment at the end was just kind of dumb. Still, it's a decent movie. It's worth checking out. It's got a lot of special features, none of them in Japanese, so you should be good with that one. And I'm going to have to say that Glass on Blu-ray kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Other releases this week include Escape Room, Destroyer, and Tito and the Birds. And that's it for this week. Thanos is snapping his fingers, which means I got to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Long Shot and Ugly Dolls. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.